All right, guys, pictures up.
Pictures up.
Pictures up.
Let's roll sound.
Rolling.
Rolling.
Sound speeds.
Camera speeds. Two. Asham, take two. Mark.
Set up.
Set.
And action.
Welcome to the Penn Cinema Podcast, your behind-the-curtain connection for movie news and reviews. Now, here are your hosts, Penn Ketchum and David Moulton.
Welcome to the show. I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum.
What's up?
How you living, David?
Oh, man, I'm living high and fine, you know? Doing what you can.
I'm living just like my haircut, high and tight.
Oh, man. So what's the week been like there, second week back in the biz?
Yeah, so... I mean, you know, it's funny, like, we all... And I know it's not just the movies, it's everybody. We are all recalibrating our expectations. Yeah. You know what I mean? So every Saturday, we do about 200, 250 people, and we're thrilled with that. We're super happy with that. It's not the 2,000 or 3,000 that we're used to, but, like, I'll take it, you know? And It's a whole new world, and even my staff or, you know, the kids that are working there are like, you know, we're trying to get used to, like, this is what we do. It's a little slower. It's not quite as much fun, but it's all right. It's all right. I mean, I think, you know, when we get into the news, we'll talk about Wonder Woman getting pushed back, and I think that it's going to be really interesting to see how significant that is, because what I'm seeing at the theater now is we obviously Tenet's the big number one movie by a long shot, but people are coming out to see the other movies. You know what I mean? Like, people are coming out after they've seen Tenet. They're coming out to see, you know, whatever else is in the trailer, whether it's, you know, David Copperfield, which we're going to talk about today, or even like New Mutants. Unhinged is quietly still doing business. I mean, really? I think this is a safe, conservative movie in the sense that it's not trying to be anything special. It just is what it is. It's not the best movie ever made, but it's a lot of fun, and people are digging the 300-pound Russell Crowe. And, and you know, it's like, you know, like I said, you know, we all have to, you know, recalibrate our expectations. I think the movie business is solid because what I feel good about, what my friends in exhibition feel good about, is that what we have seen in the last 2 weeks is that when we have new good movies, it's still solid. It's still a solid business. So, you know, it's just a matter of patience and you know, tenacity to stick with it and have the guts to, you know, stay open and hang in there until we start to get more and more new movies. But the thing that I'm excited about is, you know, the calendar, like every week we're getting, you know, we have some good movies coming up this week. We have The Nest, which I think looks exciting. We have The Secrets We Keep, which I think looks really exciting. And we even have that sort of documentary that we talked about a few weeks ago called As I See It, or The Way I See It. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely content out there, and it's definitely, I feel like every week it gets a little bit better.
I think we can just kind of motor into the news with this, but I know that I said it multiple times that if the theaters were gonna, it seemed like they were busting up to just explode out with new content, right? And now, especially with what we're gonna talk about with Wonder Woman, it looks like maybe they're using a little bit more of smart planning, or kind of what I was talking about when I said, you know, they need to stagger themselves and not kind of like blow it all out the door, and then we have no content because you're basically competing with yourself. Which brings us to Wonder Woman 84, which has been pushed back to December. The reasonings I was reading behind this was because Tenet was underperforming, understandably so. They wanted that, but they at the same time are like, let's give it the time it needs to breathe to make the money it needs. So let's keep it in the theater. You know, less people are allowed in the theater at the time. They're selling out easier, or people are, you know, kind of getting used to going back. Like, it's going to make the money over time, but if we release Wonder Woman in October, it's going to start taking money away from Tenet earlier than we want. And so they're pushing it back. And thus, Warner Brothers said that they might also push Dune back to give Wonder Woman its breathing space as a result. So, I mean, it's disappointing we have to wait longer for these movies, but as in a, from a business point of view, like, it makes sense. And even as a movie fan, like, you got to look at it, you know, there's, instead of all these things coming out and going, you know, and being done, like, we're going to have quality film consistently over a longer period of time.
Yeah, but I think we were already going to have quality film with consistency over a period of time. We had, the idea was Tenet in the beginning of September, end of August, call it the beginning of September, then Wonder Woman beginning of October, Black Widow the beginning of November, James Bond the middle of November, Dune in December. You know, like, I feel like we had a pretty steady thing. Now, I want to put our readers or our listeners, like you just said, that it could mean Dune is being pushed. What I'm reading is that it's not pushing Dune.
Okay.
What I'm reading is that they're grabbing, they're leaving Dune where it is and trying to essentially dominate Christmas.
Oh, well, that's good news.
Now, the other thing that I would argue is I disagree. I mean, no. I totally believe that the studio thinks like that. What you just reported is exactly how studios think. Well, we're not going to release Wonder Woman because we want everybody to go see Tenet.
Right.
But that's such a great example of stupidity on the studio's part. Like, nobody, I mean, when Wonder Woman was scheduled to come out, it would have been either the fifth week of Tenet. There's nobody who in their fifth week, like in that beginning of October, who was like, you know, I wanted to see Wonder Woman, but now I'm going to see Tenet. Like, people who are watching Tenet in the fifth week, there's not a lot of them. You know what I mean?
Right.
And if anything, I would argue that you leave Wonder Woman in the beginning of October, it brings people who are not Christopher Nolan fans, brings them to the theater to see Wonder Woman because everyone loves Gal Gadot and the first Wonder Woman was so universally acclaimed. So you come out to see Wonder Woman because Wonder Woman was awesome and 6 weeks ago I was too scared to go to the theater. I come out to the theater to see Wonder Woman. I see how safe the theater is. I see how clean it is. I see how far apart everybody's sitting. And then I see the trailer for Tenet and I'm like, you know what? Wonder Woman was awesome. Let's come back tomorrow or next week and see Tenet. So I feel like Wonder Woman could have been used as a way to prop up the tail end of Tenet rather than competing with the tail end of Tenet. But to me, that's just another good example of studios who have no experience with exhibition, sort of in their little caves, coming up with oddball.
All right. I hear you.
But as they say, that's just me.
Come on.
It's just me. Well, you know, we find ourselves frequently complaining about the studios and mostly about their decisions. I don't even complain about how greedy they are and, you know, all that kind of stuff because that's fine. They're here to make money and I don't hold that against them. But it's so frequently they make stupid, there's no other word for it, stupid decisions about their release calendar. But at the end of every rant, I always look over to Drew or Bob or whoever I'm talking to, and I say, you know what? If I was so smart, why don't I have a movie studio? You know, and I guess that's it. You know, maybe there's something else that they understand about their side of the business that I don't understand. But until somebody explains that to me, then it's just stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked about stuff getting pushed back. Let's talk about something that it's not getting pushed back. It's happening before you even know it. Shazam 2 starts filming early 2021.
Bam!
Bam! Shazam! How excited are you for what's his name? Who's the lead? Levy. To be back in the film saddle, making Shazam.
You know what I love about these guys?
Yeah? What?
Hold on. You know what cracks me up?
Let me get this Valentine's Day card I have prepped out, and I'll write down the things Penn loves about you, and I'll mail it to them.
And then they'll be like, oh, it's the same card we got last year from him. I love thinking about how these guys are like big time movie makers. Like, they're a big deal. They're making millions of dollars. They carry a lot of weight in Hollywood. They're very important people. And somewhere in the Keystone State, there's a couple of guys doing a podcast who can't remember their name. We don't know your name. We don't know how to pronounce it. You know, you're not really hot shit to us.
Yeah. Who do you think you – can you say our names? I mean,
come on. I mean, that's really
– That's the big thing. So, I mean, and obviously you'd think we could remember since that was literally all of the big news this week. It was kind of a slow week. The other thing that you've most people – everyone who I respect saw was probably Dune articles all week long. There was a lot of them. So let's get right into trailers, because we have a ton this week, and I am utterly shocked at how many trailers we have here and how many of them are just like legit good.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking the same thing. This is the best crop of trailers we've had in a long time.
Right. So, I mean, I said it already. Let's just start off with Dune.
Oh, was there a Dune trailer?
Let me tell you. Everyone I've had a chance to mention this movie to, I've mentioned it to.
Really?
Yeah. Can you imagine? This trailer came out great. The first time I watched it, I was like, all right. I don't know how I feel. Second time I watched it, I was like, Third time I watched it, yeah, I'm in. Give it to me now. I want it.
We got to break this down. What was your hesitation on the first go round? Like, when you weren't 100% in, what was holding you back?
Some of the set pieces look empty, you know, in a way. Like, and I think that in context, they'll make more sense. Like, where you see a bunch of guys standing around and it looks like they're just standing around against like a black palette. I'm sure they're in like a ship or they're like next to a giant wall and the perspective is just not in that scene to see what's happening. Or the other part that I was kind of like iffy about was the large pictures of armies just like out on the field. And I was like, I get that that's how it is, but at the same time, I'm like, out of context, it wasn't really doing much for me, but the beats and the in it, just great. I think that Zendaya looks great as Chaney, Paul, even like the little glimpses of him talking about how he can see the future, which is like a big thing that people aren't picking up that's a theme, so much about this movie trailer. Timothy Chalamet looks great as Paul. It was funny because I had a friend who was like, I don't know, they need to do it where he's not so young. And I'm like, he's 15 in the book. Like he's fine. He's actually aged up in this. And they were like, well, there's not enough Sting in the movie. And I was like,
enough Sting?
Yeah, because he was in the Lynch one. And so many articles. Oh, man, my rage meter was like... was like off the charts, because so many articles were referencing like stuff from the Lynch movie and like here it is, the sleeper awakens. I'm like, they don't actually say that in the book. That was a movie thing. And it's like, and then comments on it like, why would they remake Lynch's movie? And it's like, oh my gosh. Serenity now.
So I watched this trailer on two different occasions with two different people.
Okay.
And the one guy leans over to me and says, I mean, he knew what he was doing. He was up to speed. Like, he totally knew exactly what he knew. He knew the hype. You know what I mean? He knew that there had been a teaser trailer. Now we're watching the real trailer, like all this kind of stuff. And he leans over to me and he goes, are we watching a Star Wars trailer? Did you have, like, I mean, he was kind of teasing, but also making the point that, like, it felt a little bit like some of, like, the newer Star Wars, 7, 8, and 9. Like, it had a little bit of that feel. You're not seeing, is he the only person that said that?
No, because I saw comments on that online. People said, looks
oh,
like
you
Star
did?
Wars.
Okay.
I think the general film audience sees space opera and thinks Star Wars.
Ah, okay.
Especially since Star Wars is also so new in the mind, and there hasn't been anything to challenge it
right.
in quite some time. And the last three Star Wars movies all took heavily placed on sand planets.
Mm.
Which Dune is a sand planet.
Right.
And I mean, what do you want? I mean,
yeah.
I get the comparisons. Dune is like about 10 years Star Wars is senior, so just throwing that out there.
Dune is 10 years Star Wars senior. What does that mean?
Like, the book came out in 65 or
oh,
something.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
So, like, the possibility.
So, if anything, Star Wars is ripping off Dune.
Yeah, come on. Jeez. No.
Do we know if George Lucas read Dune?
I don't know. He could have.
I'm gonna follow that up, and we're going to include that over the next few weeks as we approach, wait for it, Dune Day.
Dune Day. Oh.
So the second guy that I was with watching this trailer,
yeah.
The comment was one I'm not sure I should share with you.
Well, hold on. Let me get my knives out and my notebook to write down who it was. I can go get them.
He says to me, I don't know why they needed to remake this. For those of you listening at home, David has now gone comatose and fallen out of his chair. He's obviously this is it. Thanks, guys. We had a great run, 86 weeks. This is what it took to put him over the edge. Good night, and thank you, Jesus.
Let me ask you this. Is this a person who watched Dune when it was out? David Lynch's
yeah,
Dune
in the theaters.
Out. Yeah,
like old enough that they saw it in the movie theater.
Right, right. And this is also someone who's probably never read the book.
What book?
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's the call of a lot of people who saw the movie when it came out in the 80s, when it was kind of like it was a flop, but it was a groundbreaking flop in what it did. And think that that's what Dune is. And that movie is not Dune. It's so not Dune. And it hurts that it's so not Dune. And many people take that movie as just like to heart. And that's like watching the Hobbit cartoon movies from the 80s and being like, well, that's Lord of the Rings. See ya. You know? Like, it pains me to hear that. You know, as we've spoken many times, I host the Dune Saga podcast with two other gentlemen, and one of them, Jim Arrowood, that was his only exposure to Dune before we did the podcast. He had not read any of the books. And then now, of course, he's, you know, right with us. We've been doing it for years, and he's read them all. And he openly admit he thought that was Dune. And he was like, I thought this movie was good. And now he's like, I like it for nostalgia purposes, but it's not Dune. It's a different thing. So... anyway,
you know what that conversation reminds me of? And I'm sorry once again for bringing the Grateful Dead into a movie podcast, but there's a really good, no, bear with me here just a second, David.
Okay, I'm
there's
here.
There's a really good analogy, a really good comparison. All right. In the early 1980s, like around 1983, I think it debuted. It might have been 1982, but I forget. The Grateful Dead pulled out a bunch of new songs that they had just written. One was called Hell in a Bucket. One was called Throwing Stones. And then they started playing this other song called Touch of Grey. And they started playing Touch of Grey, and they played it, and people who love the Dead listened to it and talked about it and thought about it and wrote about it, and you know, we understood it on every level. We understood on sort of in the true, sincere, like we knew like what that song meant and what it was about and what was going on and everything like that. In 1987, the song was actually released on a record. So they started playing it in concert, you know, 4 years before it was released, and it went platinum and became like a number one hit. It's their only or one of their very few number one hits. And so now all of a sudden, you got all these idiots all around the world talking about Touch of Grey like they know anything about the Grateful Dead,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And now you got all these idiots showing up at concerts that don't know. All they want is like, how much longer till they play the Touch of Grey? You know, which meanwhile we're like, oh God, don't play that song again. You know,
yeah,
we just heard it last night.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to hear it for another six shows.
Right.
So it's, I think it's a fair comparison, and I'll just say, I feel your pain. It was fun to watch your head explode, but I feel your pain.
That's exactly, you're right there. All these people who are like, I see all these YouTube videos are like, oh, I love Dune. This one vlogger I've been watching, is she's been going on about how she loves Dune, and she's been buying the books. And then recently she admitted she's never read them. Or watched any of the films. And I'm like, what? What?
Oh my God. All right. So we have lots of other good trailers, but I think that what I'm hearing you say, and you're the only one whose opinion matters on this, you're pleased with the Dune trailer,
yeah,
like off to a good start. I felt really cool and really well informed because I did point out to my friend about how you see how they're all wearing masks, you know, because they got to conserve water or something like that. You know,
yeah,
I said, it's really authentic to the book. You know, I put my pinky out and everything, you know.
I mean, when I went to the movies this week to watch David Copperfield and I didn't see the Dune trailer, I almost walked out. How is this not in front of every single film in the theater?
Well, in advance of that, I did send an email to all my GMs and staff who are responsible for putting trailers on things. And I said, for the love of God, make sure this new Dune trailer is on every show of Tenet, Mutants, and Unhinged. Like, because I just knew, like, the guys would be coming out.
Yeah.
And if somebody paid $13 to see Tenet, and part of their thought process was, oh, I would pay $13 to see Dune. I knew that there was that. I know, and I didn't get a chance to talk to every single moviegoer this weekend, even though I was there quite a bit. But I guarantee you there was at least one, and probably more than one, who paid a ticket to see Tenet just because they wanted to see the Dune trailer on the big screen. Don't you think that's true?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, that was one of the big reasons I went to see Dune on the day, or not Dune, Tenet on the day I did, because that was the day the teaser was supposed to come out. So
yeah.
So, all right, well, let's move on. We got a lot of good ones here. I think maybe the one that I find least likely to show up in theaters around here, although it looks quite interesting, is the movie 2067.
I would agree with your statement, but I think you could end your sentence a little bit earlier.
Oh.
I think this is the movie least likely to appear in theaters.
Okay, in general.
Period. I also I don't share your enthusiasm for this title.
Oh, really?
I think this is the weakest one of the week.
Yeah, I could settle with that as well. I thought the storyline seemed interesting, but I'm a sci-fi guy. And so the premise here in 2067 is they've created this machine that possibly could go to the future. They've never used it, but they receive a message back through it that says to send this guy to the future.
Mm.
And so they send him, and he's in the future, and it looks like not just post-apocalyptic, but post-apocalyptic, and the world has recovered, minus humanity. Like, buildings covered in plants and stuff. And he's, like, not sure what he's supposed to do there. He's supposed to send something back to save everyone, and it's like, well, if he does that, then he would have never been sent to the future, so everything was doomed to be this way. It's kind of like one of those kind of paradox things.
The grandfather paradox, which we discussed in Tenet.
Yes.
Yeah. Correct. I don't know. I guess I'm being a little bit harsh on it just because so many other titles were good this week, but I felt a little bit like we've seen this premise before.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But I also will say to me, this is the kind of title that, like, I'm skipping around on Netflix or something like that. Like, I feel like I could watch this movie at home because the cinematography, the scope of the film to me wasn't compelling that I needed to see it theatrically. The most compelling part of this movie is just, first of all, the concept, and second of all, the idea of, like, I wonder how it ends.
Yeah, I'm right there with you watching it. I thought, this, how is this not a Netflix movie? And I couldn't find anything saying it was going to streaming, but it looks about the quality of a streaming movie, a good streaming movie. So
Right. Yeah. All right, the next title, trailer, which if you're listening to this at work, like I know some of our listeners do, go, like, take a minute, pause the podcast and watch this trailer because you'll get a good laugh out of it. The movie is called Save Yourself, and it includes an incredibly funny line from a joke playing on Sean Connery's thick accent. So now whenever I see this title, I say it in my head as Shave Yourself, first. But this movie, the premise is this couple, this incredibly – I mean, this part of it alone makes me want to see this movie. The couple is painfully hip.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
You know the types. We like we all are friends with somebody like this. Like they're just awful, you know. And so they decide to completely unplug, turn off their cell phone, not be near computers, not check their email, not read anything online. Like they, and so they go off. They end up in this cabin, totally isolated. And then while they're out there, unbeknownst to them, the world gets invaded by aliens, which are apparently poofy aliens.
They look like tribbles if you're a Star Trek person. Yeah.
So I don't know. The movie's called Save Yourself. It's a straight up comedy. I think it looks brilliant. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I was like, this looks really funny. I'm totally on board. I love when they're panicking in the car and she's like, okay, you go to the firewood. I'll go inside and get the bags. We'll meet back here and then we'll reverse out. He's like, all right, reverse out, bags together, firewood. Got it. He's panicking and he can't remember the sequence. Yeah. I'm fully down with this movie. I think it looks great. The actors look like a lot of fun.
And I think this is the kind of movie, if I remember correctly, it comes out like October.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's not forever away. And I think this is what I mean when I was talking at the top of the show about, like, there's some good smaller movies coming out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're going to move on to a horror movie, which generally Penn and I would not be on board with. But this one has got us both, like, waiting in our seats for it. Like, we're in line for this movie. It's called Freaky. Comes out Friday the 13th in October, I'm assuming?
November. Friday, November 13th.
Okay. And it's a horror movie. It's, I don't know, it must have been a rights thing, but they could have called it Freaky Friday the 13th. it would have been great. But it's the premise of Freaky Friday, where two people switch bodies.
And obviously, one needs to be an adult male and the other is a teenage girl.
Right. And what really got me is the adult male is played by Vince Vaughn. So the idea is there's a killer out there, and he's called the something slasher or something, and he goes to kill this girl, and he doesn't kill her, but they switch bodies.
And so he's now, like, right about to kill her, and then the lightning strikes or something happens.
Yeah. So she wakes up the next day, this teenage girl, in this serial killer's weird, like, hut. And the serial killer is in her body, and she's got to convince her friends that she's not the serial killer whose face is all over the place. And how does she get her body? She's got a certain amount of time to get her body back before they're stuck, switched like that. And it looks really funny, and I really want to see this movie.
It looks funny, and it also looks really gritty. Like, there's going to be some nasty kills.
Yeah, yeah, it really does, yeah.
I think, and I did read about this, that they did confirm exactly what you said, which was the original working title was Freaky Friday the 13th.
Nice.
And they were advised that title was not available.
Oh, man. Definitely check this movie out if you like dark comedy or if you like horror.
I think it looks like on the scale of things, like, What was that dark comedy we watched where the woman went the night before their wedding and had to play like hide? I think the movie was Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek, yeah.
Yeah. Or no, the movie was Ready or Not.
Ready, that's it. Ready or Not.
Yeah, Ready or Not. This is like that, but one click closer to a horror movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Ready or Not sort of stayed in the dark comedy realm. This is more like a funny, but it's a funny horror movie. It's a horror movie, I think, that's funny.
There's just the scene where they've got like a teenage boy and they're trying to convince him that they have the girl tied up who has the villain in her. And the villain and the guy, and she's like, I'm so-and-so. And the girl's like, but Bob. Stop.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So good.
So good. All right, so what do we got next here, Penn?
You got Falling.
Oh, you want me to cover this one?
You got.
Yeah. There's a movie called Falling starring Viggo Mortensen. And
written by Viggo Mortensen.
Written, starring, directed.
Cinematographer. Viggo Mortensen.
Viggo Mortensen. Yeah.
Caterer, Viggo Mortensen.
Grip.
Head grip, Viggo Mortensen. Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah. This is a movie about a father who is slowly going into dementia, who has to move in with his son, who he doesn't approve of, he's never approved of, apparently. And just like the struggles of a family living with a family member who's losing their mind, and the struggles for the person losing the mind as well. I went back and forth on this one. I'll be honest. I felt like everyone else was in one movie, and the dad losing his mind looks like he's in another movie that's much more intense. I don't know how they'll mix together, but, I mean, Viggo Mortensen is good in his craft, so...
Is he, though?
Well, I mean, look, he was in The Green Book.
No. Your craft is acting.
That's what
then. I mean. Then he's A plus. I don't need to. We don't need to talk about that.
But directing.
I mean, he's amazing. He's been amazing in some of my favorite movies. I mean, the guy's he's awesome.
Yeah.
But this is his directorial debut. I'm turned off by the fact that he is doing it all. He wrote it, directed it, starred in it. You know, but it makes it feel like a pet project that. I would like to know why he didn't just, you know, direct it and direct somebody. I don't know. It just, the whole thing, it's not an impressive looking package to me.
Yeah. I don't know. I know we said that the 2067 was the least likely to be in film. Kind of in theater. And it was kind of like the weakest. I do feel like Falling, to me.
Yeah.
As interest-wise, is the weakest movie of the list.
In the race to the bottom, Falling has a good chance.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I don't know. I mean, not everyone can be Elizabeth Banks.
No.
I mean, right?
Elizabeth Blanks. Did you say Blanks?
No, I tried to say Banks, but it came out Blanks.
I think we just got a new nickname for her. All right, so the next trailer...
Yeah.
Is a documentary called After So Many Days. And I'm curious, as the person on the show who most regularly gets made fun of for not remembering things, do you remember this movie, David?
After So Many Days?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean I don't? Do you remember this movie?
Do you remember watching this movie?
No.
Not the trailer, the movie.
No. Well, see, before we started recording, you thought this was... some movie made in 2015, but this clearly, these people are not in 2015. You've seen this movie, Penn.
You have too.
No, I haven't.
Yes, you have.
No, I've not seen this movie.
David, we watched this movie on when we were film reviewers for the inaugural Red Rose Film Festival. This was one of the linked movies that we watched. This took the prize for, it did not win for best movie, but it did win some other category, like judge's favorite or something. Like, you didn't watch it?
This wasn't on my list. I didn't see it.
All right. I did see this movie, and I'm really tickled that it's coming around and getting a cool, legit national release. The movie is called After So Many Days. You can go on Vimeo right now and watch it, I think. I think it's already out there online, but the movie is really good, which is why I wanted to leave it in the show notes. It's an easy-to-watch movie about this couple who are both songwriters and song performers, and they're sort of frustrated that their singing career, their performing career, is not taking off the way they had wanted it to. And so what they say is, let's give ourselves a year, and if we can't make a go of it as singer-songwriters, then we will get day jobs and, you know, grow up and leave it behind us. And what's neat about it is they really are committed to literally, so they sort of say, well, give it a year, but what does that mean? You're like, what do you do all year? So what they decide is that they're going to do, the two of them will do a performance every single day, 365 performances in a row. And what's brilliant is some of the performances are legit gigs, like in a bar or a restaurant, or there's even a couple that have, you know, larger audiences, like at a music festival or something like that. But then some of the gigs are like they can't find a gig, but they stick to their commitment to do a gig every day. So they set up like in a laundromat, just the two of them, like with, you know, in front of 12 people doing their laundry. And do a performance of their songs there. So it's really interesting. It to me, it was a fascinating story about kind of that challenge of the, I think we all deal with like the balance between like, for how long do I pursue my dreams before I sort of settle down and just get a day job and give up? And not that, you know, and I think they take it to the extreme, but I think that everybody sort of struggles with, like, you know, at what point do I have to face the facts that I'm not going to be, you know, a famous singer? So I don't know. The movie is called After So Many Days. I think you can probably find it online right now. But they're also making a run at a proper theatrical release. It has a cool new poster that they didn't have when they came to the Red Rose Film Festival. The website is punched up since then. Maybe you weren't with me, but we met remember when we recorded the podcast live in the lobby of that hotel?
Yeah.
In that same lobby, I met the two of them when they came to the film festival and they, you know, showed their movie and did a Q&A afterwards and everything like that. Yeah.
Look at you. Hobnobbing with the big people.
Oh yeah. You know, these two guys and, Viggo Mortensen,
the Levy Levi guy,
right. Levy Levi, who nobody knows his name.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on.
We've got a movie called Dating Amber.
David, I have to get some off my chest.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I accused you of not remembering this movie. I thought we watched the same... I thought you and I watched the same list of films.
No.
Because you and I were both like on the review board, like we were watching movies. And I guess now that I think about it, of course we did not watch the same ones because we both had access to like 170 movies and there was no way we would.
You watched end up... every single one.
I did watch 111 of them.
Yeah.
I watched the second most of anybody. Ian Long watched the most. He watched every single film that came through. I watched the second most as chairman of the board, and Ryan Shank watched the third most.
It's crazy. Yeah, I think I watched like four or five or something. Like I watched I watched what was assigned to me, and then I don't know that I think you could give me one or two that I looked up above and beyond that.
Okay. Well, anyway, I feel bad. So let your clean record of remembering things stand untarnished.
Oh, my goodness. What was I going to do with my life?
right.
Well, time to pack it in.
Yeah. Hell, you had a good run.
All right. So Dating Amber.
Yes.
This is a movie about coming of age and dealing with who you really are, I guess. The premise here is that two gay people, a man and a woman, who have been ridiculed for their preferences, decide that they are going to date each other so that they don't get teased. And then one has an easier go of it than the other, and drama ensues. I think it's very interesting. I think it'll be very touching for people who struggle with that kind of persecution. It's an interesting film.
I agree with you, and I can't wait to see it. What's interesting about this movie is I think it touches on some really intense dynamics and feelings, and but it does so without compromising the fact that it is first and foremost a comedy.
Yeah.
It's first and foremost a funny movie that also seems to successfully tackle some pretty intense issues that people deal with. Did you ever see that movie Sing Street?
No.
Love this movie. Sing Street is absolutely brilliant. It has nothing to do with the same issues, but it takes place, I think, either in Ireland or England or something like that. And it has one of the all-time favorite lines that my family and I quote all the time, where the one kid, it's all these kids, and they're trying to form a rock band and become famous. And the two or three kids come over to the one kid's house. The one kid's obsessed with rabbits. And they're excited. They want to get this kid out of the house. We're going to go start a band, or we need to borrow your amplifier. I forget why they were going over to the kid's house. But they say to the kid, they knock on the door, and the kid answers the door, and he's holding a rabbit. And the one kid goes, "What are you doing?" And the kid in the house goes, shrugs and goes, "Rabbit stuff." So like, if you're in the Ketchum house, not really doing anything, and somebody asks you what you're doing, there's a pretty good chance, an outstanding chance, that the reply will be rabbit stoof. So I'm sorry to get off track. Dating Amber looks wonderful, looks beautiful, moving, but also really hilarious. Yeah, that'll be a good one. Dating Amber.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. The next one we have here is For a Fathom Event. So this is an older movie, but not one that most people probably have seen, because it hasn't had an American release before, a wide release as far as I'm aware. It's called Memories of a Murderer, or Memories of Murder, sorry.
I think it's pronounced murder.
Murder. It's Zhang Bong-ho, the guy who did Parasite.
Isn't it Bong?
Bong. Zhang.
Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah, Bong Joon-ho, yeah. Something like that. Anyway, it's a murder mystery that supposedly is really good. The trailer is very, very interesting. I definitely want to make it out to see this if it comes around for the Fathom event. And if you liked Parasite, you'll probably wind up enjoying this one. A lot of his movies have a very similar like feel, and just like a lot of big guys around, big directors around here, they use the same actors. I think the lead in this is the same guy who plays the father in Parasite, I believe. So yeah.
I'm 100% going to see this, and I'm blanking on the name, but the movie, first of all, it was his first movie, or one of his early movies, I should say, and so it didn't get the wide release, or it's sort of getting the attention now based on the fame that comes along with the incredible success of Parasite. But the forest in which these murders take place, there have been a number of movies made about this, this murder spree and, the murder, the forest and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, this looks intense. I'm excited to see it.
Cool.
Going to be a winner. Yep.
This next one's on you, buddy.
The Racer?
Yeah.
Is it on me because you forget about it?
No. If someone's going to be passionate about this movie, it's going to be Penn Ketchum.
Well, you better start us on that, because I'm blanking. I can't remember.
Can't remember this movie.
Yeah, I can't remember it.
It was like made for you. It's a guy about a guy in the Tour de France who's on one of the teams, but he's not the winner. He's a support racer.
That's right. Yes, I remember now.
And he's
yes.
getting kind of old.
And he was kicked out for doping, but then he was sort of like, what, reinstated, or somehow sort of came back. I have to tell you, the trailer looked okay. I've been watching the Tour de France, and I love bike racing and all this kind of stuff, but I think we've talked about this on the show before. Like, I'm 100% into documentaries. You know, like, I love watching people ride their bikes, and I love watching true stories about races and journeys and trials and tribulations. And even, like, and I would sort of apply that to all sports. I loved the Michael Jordan documentary about his, you know, years at the Bulls and all this kind of stuff. But I typically don't get super into sports fiction movies.
This was
what did you think?
I saw this movie, and I don't know if you noticed at the end they said for Penn Ketchum.
Yeah, I don't know. I was not super impressed. I mean I dig the Tour de France and I dig racing, and I guess it looks okay, but I don't need to see this movie, and I sincerely doubt it'll get any kind of significant American release. I would be shocked.
I looked at it, I thought, looks fine. Didn't really move me either way. Didn't strike me as something bad. Didn't strike me as something really like I would be interested in.
Right.
If someone was like, I want to watch this movie, you want to watch it with me? I was like, I'd probably be like, fine. Like, I'm not going to argue against it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, anyway. All right. I think this is among the weaker of the movies this week.
Yeah.
So the last film that we have, I think, was just, unless I missed it, we're still on teaser trailers for Nomadland, right?
Yeah.
This is Frances McDormand, and or however you say her name. Do you know what this movie's about? I don't think I know what this movie's about yet.
Something about an epic economical collapse in a town, and so basically everyone's homeless type of thing.
Yeah, and the trailer kind of just shows her walking around thoughtfully, sort of.
She's just walking through a camp of, I guess, people who are living out of campers and stuff now.
Like RVs and vans and stuff like that. I don't know. Like, I trust her, and I forget who the director is, but the one blurb I read about this film made me feel like it was going to be a really well-made movie. So it would be, you know, sort of a quality movie to watch.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm intrigued enough that, like, when a regular trailer comes out, I'll watch it, but that's... Yeah.
So let's do it. Trailer of the week, and I'm willing to say, when I do mine, I'll exclude Dune because clearly that's my trailer of the week. So if I had to pick another trailer, it'll be
okay. So we're ruling out Dune as trailer of the week, and we're going to pick another trailer for trailer of the week.
Yeah.
Okay. Where are you at?
Man, it's a tough call for me. It's. I'm gonna go with Freaky. But it was almost Save Yourself.
I'm between Save Yourself and Dating Amber, and I'm going to go with Save Yourself because it's the only trailer of the list that made me literally laugh out loud.
Okay.
Like, Dating Amber was funny, and I smirked, and it was cute, and, you know, it made me feel warm inside, and I want to see it. But Save Yourself, literally, I was laughing out loud while I was watching it.
Yeah. Cool.
Awesome. I think Save Yourself is going to be one of, I mean, there's nothing more fun than making fun of hipsters. And I think that Save Yourself sort of does that. And I think I sort of get the sense almost like Save Yourself was maybe made by a bunch of hipsters who were making fun of themselves.
Easily. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It definitely has that sense of like making fun of itself, which I really appreciate.
All right, let's get into it. David Copperfield, the personal history of David Copperfield starring Dev Patel. Penn, how did you feel about this movie?
I liked it. I was on board. I thought it was super feel good. I don't want to say that it was slow, but it was definitely like it was not Daniel Craig. I really liked the use of the narration and the sort of – you know, flip-flopping of timelines and the sort of overlap of, I don't know, overlap might be too strong of a word, but I just felt like it was different. It was not your typical movie. They tell the story in a really, I think, creative way, unless I'm like missing something. I don't think this has been done a whole lot. I don't remember any that was done like it. My favorite part of the entire movie, and I guess this is a spoiler if it matters, is the final line where Dev Patel is sort of walking through the house and sort of looks at the child on the floor and says, like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, sort of talks to the inner child and is like, you're going to be okay. It's going to be all right. So you could, I could see myself making, you know, sometimes I give presentations about faith and faith-related stuff, and I talk about movies that are not made to be faith-based films but end up on discussions of faith, and I think this movie could fall into that category.
I love this movie.
Yeah.
I like this movie way more than Tenet, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
I think people are like, everyone I talked to about it, every single person I talked to about it didn't know this movie existed.
Yeah.
And I think that's a shame because it's really, really good. I thought it was fun. I thought it was whimsical. I thought when it got serious and it got low, like, I felt legitimately bad for characters, but then it would turn around and take you someplace really fun with that. The acting, every single actor in this movie,
oh my God,
is amazing. Absolutely right. Amazing. It's not like, okay, so the trailer makes it seem, I was expecting a little bit more comedy, and it has comedy in it, but it's not as like strong as I thought. I thought it was going to be like situational comedy constantly. The trailer makes it look very much like a Wes Anderson film.
Right.
And it's
right. You know,
it's, this movie is exactly what I always expect from a Wes Anderson film, but don't get. Because, you know, he's his own thing, but I always expect this is the type of movie I'm going to get, and this is the type of movie I want. And then I get something a little bit weirder from Wes Anderson that's not quite this, and it disappoints me, where this performed so well with that to me. And I really, really enjoyed it. I definitely want to, like, this is one of those movies I'll definitely come back to or share with other people at some point. Well, some of the crazy things about this movie that I took note of really towards the end, or kind of at the beginning and at the end. So one thing that I thought, I don't know if it was on purpose or it just turned out this way or what, but the casting for this movie, which is phenomenal, these people are all cast with absolute zero regard to race. I don't know if you noticed, it just the pairings, the parentage pairings don't make any sense. But it doesn't matter. It never comes up, and it really doesn't matter. And I thought that was really progressive of a movie, really cool to see something like that put into practice and how it didn't affect anything. And I thought that was really cool. The other thing was, and I kind of took that as this whole movie is his like look into his past from his memory. No one ages.
Right.
In the movie. The same actor plays the young version of them, unless they were a kid. They play the young version of them. They play the same version of them 20 years later with no extra makeup until I felt like at the end of the movie, they kind of aged up for the very last scene. The characters were aged. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Because when you remember someone, you always remember them. They're always themselves, but you're never surprised to see their, like, if you see them a lot, you're, they get older, but in your mind, they're still them when you spent all this time together with them.
Right.
And that's like, that's right. The version of them you'll always remember them as. And I thought that was really interesting. Like the girl who takes care of him as a kid, like she's always the same through his entire life until that last scene.
And I think what was one of the like subtle things that I loved about it, and I was pleased that somehow they made it, you know, they used a variety of tools or vehicles to make this possible. They really talked about the characters' names. Yeah. Like what the nanny had a great, what was it, like Pot Nanny or something like that. And then they made fun of it. And then the nanny was like, I would have thought your name would be Pot Kettle Black.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And
it was. Go ahead.
I just thought it was really well done. I just thought it was really like, you know, the guy's name's not Dave, you know what I mean? Or Penn or something, you know, is really creative and really sort of, in a literary way, you know, it felt like you were watching, if this is an incredibly stupid statement, but felt like you were watching great literature.
Yeah. Yeah. I really want to encourage anyone who's looking for something to see and they thought, oh, I've seen Tenet, I don't know what to go see this movie. It's
you,
worth your time.
You have inspired me.
Oh.
Because, you know, on Monday mornings, I go in and make decisions about what's going to stay at the theater and what's going to go away. And David Copperfield is not doing particularly well, so I had in back of my mind sort of planned, like, this movie's going to go away. But on the strength of your passion, which I agree with, but I just, you know, I guess I hadn't quite realized, you know, didn't appreciate what I was watching until I could, you know, sort of soak up some of your positive vibes. This movie needs to stay, and people find it, and, you know, what the heck, we got plenty of room.
Yeah.
So we'll hold it over for the Penn Cinema podcast listeners. Mm. We'll hold it over for you.
Nice. Go out and see this movie. Show Penn what's up.
Please.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess we're both totally on board with this movie. It's worth your time. Definitely go see it. Moving on to listener notes, questions, answers, comments, and drama.
Yes. Drama.
Yeah. We'll start off this week with Joel Codes, and he says, "Hey, look.
Look.
All right,
pal.
Joel Codes is speaking here. Let's all pay attention."
He says, I have to say, I'm not gonna take this away from you. You're gonna report on this, but I loved this. I want to set the background
okay.
for our listeners.
Okay.
This was the most amped up coming at you. There was exclamation points everywhere. There was heavy use of the caps lock. This email was coming at you, right? I mean, this was not like, oh, this is my thoughts. This is what I think. I thought this was a cute movie. No, my man, Joel Codes, is coming at you.
And he's got words of wisdom. He says, Look. If your date doesn't want to see Tenet, then break up with them.
All right? What?
They are not worth your time.
If your date doesn't want to see Tenet, then break up with them. They aren't worth your time.
Boom. He says, the only reason you shouldn't see Tenet on date night is if you've already seen it two or more times.
So if you've seen it four times, you're off the hook.
Yeah. Whoosh.
You're now qualified to see other movies. But until then.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love this email because, you know, I've talked to, as I'm sure you have as well, a lot of people about Tenet. I mean, this is what we talk about, right?
Yeah.
And I've talked almost everybody who's seen it has liked it. And there's a scale. You know, there's like some people liked it this much and some people liked it this much, you know, and there's a scale. And I sort of talk to people and everybody falls within this like range. Let's call it like 0 to 10. Right. And then Joel comes in and his range is like 26.
So pumped about it.
I love it. I love the enthusiasm. And I have to say, my man is the first person I've talked to who is like off the charts excited about this movie.
And that's awesome.
That is amazing. Yeah. We love you for it.
Yeah. He also said he's super pumped for Joss
Whedon. That wasn't the end of his enthusiastic email. Oh, he had more to say.
Oh, no. He went on, and I'm summarizing here because it was like a full paragraph of how excited he is about Joss Whedon being involved with Star Wars. So my boy is back on board with Star Wars. Don't worry. He hasn't lost faith like some people. You know? So now let's get into some drama. Mystery Gobble writes in, abhorred, anger.
You know, I got a problem, David.
What's your problem with Penn?
I got to tell you, I got a problem with this email. I got a problem. I want to tell you about my problem. I'm going to spell it out for you.
Okay.
You know what my problem is?
What's your problem?
My problem. What?
Oh, is this your problem? Because I'm waiting. What's your problem?
This is my problem. Okay. I have a problem. This guy. I'm going to tell you about my problem. This is my problem. My problem is this guy freely admits that he completely drops off the Penn Cinema podcast for months on end.
Yeah.
During a time, by the way, in which we have literally nothing else to do.
Yeah.
And he comes at us and says, like, hey, I blew you guys off for 3 months, but here's what I think.
Yeah. Hey,
right.
How come you don't do this segment anymore?
So tell us, with that, now that I got that problem off my chest, go ahead and tell us what he wrote in this week.
He said,
the drama that he tried to stir up.
He said, what happened to the What's Your Problem with Penn segment? He said, David, David, you got to be more on ball with this. You got to call him out more. And I was like, I mean, we still do it, but we also still do. Oh wait, what? Huh? What's your issue? Huh? When you say you've got something to say.
Oh my man, yeah. I love it. I love that he's back listening, and I love that he's back writing in. And
oh, such drama.
All right, we got an interesting email. I have to say, we got an email from Encyclopedia Brown, i.e., Jason, my man. This is a guy we've talked about before who has watched an incredible amount of movies.
Yeah.
And has watched literally this year hundreds of movies, just this year. And but he raised – and we – you know, this was a guy who enthusiastically – remember a few months ago in the COVID when we were really scraping the barrel and we did a lot of shows about top 10 lists?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was super fun. I had a ball doing those, and we watched some of our favorite movies. And top 10 lists are always a fun way to sort of espouse, you know, sort of your thoughts on great movies. What are your favorite movies and all that stuff? Jason asked a question that I don't think anyone has ever asked me before. And it's kind of like saying, what do you think is the best movie? But it's a different way of putting it, which I thought – the question itself was really interesting, and even more interesting was his answers. But EB poses the question to you and to me and to all of our listeners, are there any movies that you think are flawless? And I'm going to tell you two movies that I think are flawless. And what's really interesting is I'm not sure that either of these movies made my top 10 list of favorite movies.
Really?
And how could that be? Like, how could you be of the opinion that movie X and Y are both flawless, and yet they're not on your...
They don't have as big... A lot of times, those movies are the movies you've seen the most, which kind of, over time, can take them off of your, like, super excited for list.
Right. So I have three movies, X, Y, and Z.
Okay.
And Z is consistently either number one or two of my all-time favorite movies, and that's National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Okay.
I think that movie, trying to do what it tries to do, is absolutely perfect. I will also say my other two movies, and I'm just going to throw this out there. I know you guys are all going to make fun of me, but Ocean's 11 with George Clooney and Brad Pitt.
Okay.
For what it tries to do, the soundtrack is amazing. The acting is perfect. The story is fun. The plot is fun. There's not a slow moment in it. It all ties together fun at the end. It's, to me, that movie is all but perfect. And then the third flawless movie in my mind is one that's not even on my top 10 list, but I talk about it a lot. This is the movie when somebody says, tell me your favorite movie that I've never seen. I always have a go-to answer, and that's The Mexican.
Oh, okay.
With again, Brad Pitt, James Gandolfini, and Julia Roberts. And The Mexican, in my mind, for the same reason as Ocean's 11, is kind of perfect. The acting is phenomenal. The soundtrack is great. The story is fascinating. Fascinating is a weird word. It's not fascinating. It's just a great story. And it ties together really nice. It has all kinds of layers of you know, depth to it. So those would be my three movies that are flawless. And I don't know what that says about me, that that's where I come from. But like, I look at some of my other favorite movies, like I'll even take like my beloved Godfather and say, like, there's parts of The Godfather that are problematic for me. There's slow parts that drag, the sound, you know, when they go to the wedding scene at Vito's house, is the sound jumps up and is like, it's just startling, you know, the transitions and stuff like that. So I'm not trying to say there's anything wrong with The Godfather. It's one of my favorite movies, but I'm just saying when you pose the question as, is there a movie that's flawless that's what I come up with.
Yeah. So E.B. Encyclopedia Brown's answer for himself was Children of Men and Enemy at the Gates.
What?
Yeah. But, I mean, we've been over this. These are movies that we find to be flawless, which means if you asked us to find a flaw, we'd be hard-pressed. Which brings me to mine, which I may be a little controversial on because I don't think that one of them is the best movie ever made by any means, but I cannot think of a single flaw within it. Number one, and I'm bunching together here, I'm going to say Lord of the Rings Extended Editions.
Wow.
Those movies are perfect to me. I can't think of anything wrong with them.
Right.
You know, by any means. Number two, Tron Legacy. To me, that's just, it's not, people are like, oh, it's not deep or whatever. But to me, that movie hits all the right keys. Visually, sound, acting, without being anything. It's not, I'll agree when people say it's not like a super special movie. But to me, it's like exactly perfect. And my third one, Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one.
Okay, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone speak illy of that movie in a cinematic sense.
Illy?
Illy. Illest. Illy. Ill-wise?
Illy. Illy. No, what's wrong with illy?
Ill.
Stand by it.
Illy. Illy. Yeah.
I wonder if anyone has ever spoken illy of the Penn Cinema podcast.
I doubt it. They'd have to listen first.
To wrap up this conversation of flawless movies, I have seen Children of Men and Enemy at the Gates. I remember I saw both of them when they came out to theaters, and I remember enjoying both of them. But I want to thank EB for writing in because, first of all, it's an interesting question. And second of all, I am now 100% going to go rewatch these movies. I'm inspired. I think that's – I was taken aback when he put it out there what his two – I would never have guessed those movies for him.
I wouldn't either. I mean, I've seen them both, and I don't remember Enemy at the Gate, and I don't think I enjoyed Children of Men, which I know I am – it's one of those movies that everyone loves that I'm just kind of not really passionate about.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, let's really quickly just do things we've been doing this week. Anything you've been watching, anything you've been reading?
No, I've been hung up on Tour de France, and Amy and I are watching, we finished up Schitt's Creek, waiting for the next dose, if there is one.
I've been reading Tales of Dune, which is one of the newer released Dune books, and one that we have not reviewed. It's short stories, so... we'll be recording the review for that tomorrow. So,
this week on Wednesday, we open up at Penn Cinema, all three locations, The Secrets We Keep.
Ooh, so we're doing this movie this week, starring...
This should be our movie. This stars Noomi Rapace, or Rapace?
Rapace?
You remember her as the star of the girl movies, the girl with the dragon tattoo, the girl who's playing with fire. She was also amazing in Sherlock Holmes, in the 2011 one, and she was Elizabeth Shaw in Prometheus. Yep. I thought she was great in all of those. I think she's a badass. I think she's like awesome like hero. Like, I can't wait to see her like kicking ass. This movie, The Secrets We Keep, looks really interesting. It takes place after World War II, and you know, she's sort of in the suburbs, but then you can see that sort of shit gets weird. I don't know. I think this movie is going to be great.
I'm down. I'm 110% down. I'm all about it. So cool. That's what we're reviewing next week. Now, look, if you want to be a part of the show, the easiest way you can do that, send us an email, podcast@penncinema.com, and we'll gladly respond and talk about anything that you throw our way. Otherwise, the biggest way you can help support us, how is that, Penn?
Tell a friend.
Tell all your friends.
You know how you know if you're doing it right? Uh-huh. If you're doing it right is when you tell your friend, like, hey, you should really listen to the Penn Cinema podcast. And your friend should be like, I know. You tell us this all the time. That's all you ever talk about. When you get that reaction from your friends, yeah, you know you're doing it right.
That's when you're doing it right.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah. So Thank you again for joining us this week. Once again, for the Penn Cinema Podcast, I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum.
Take care.
Take care and party on.
So hard for a
Thanks for joining us this episode. Our hosts would love to hear from you. To contact the show with your thoughts and reviews, email podcast@penncinema.com. This podcast is a production of Penn Cinema. Escape to the movies at Penn Cinema, featuring crisp digital projection, killer sound, reserved seating, and premium power recliners. With locations in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Wilmington, Delaware, and Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania. Showtimes and tickets available at www.penncinema.com.
Awesome.
Good.
Yeah. Great, I'm happy.
It's okay.